You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Courtney Coulson. This is Minute 18. This minute opens with Holloway and Shaw standing up to give their presentation, and ends with Holloway displaying the ancient artwork of the engineers. This might be the first minute that doesn't feel self-contained. It cuts halfway through a sentence. It makes more sense as a two-minute segment. This really is quite an uneventful minute, but I shall endeavour to fill this episode with at least some useful information. I'll let you be the judge of that. I somehow forgot to mention Milburn's costume in any real detail in previous episodes. He's wearing that iconic white hoodie. So many people really love it. They want one for themselves, myself included. I think it suits him. It's kind of cool, at the same time there's a softness to it, reflecting his benign nature, and contrasts well with his buddy Fifield.
Doctors Holloway and Shaw, if you would please stand. As far as you're concerned, they're both in charge.
We then cut to Vickers looking resentful again. What a great father. We see elements of the ship bleeding through the hollow projection, you know, lights and parts of the walls and stuff. I'm curious how they accomplished this scene. I suppose it's just compositing, but did they have to film Vickers and Wayland on both sets? From what I can tell from the Furious Gods documentary on the Blu-ray, which I highly recommend, that seems to be the case, but Guy Pearce was not in the old age makeup when he was standing on the Prometheus set. He just had to do that for the office set, with the Mars background being green screen, of course. So I guess he was just basically there on the Prometheus set as reference for the actors to interact with. This kind of holographic technology is so common in science fiction. It's much like artificial gravity at this point, you know, you just expect to see it, it needs no introduction. I thought I would look into it and see how far away we are from real holographic projections. Technically speaking, we can already do it. You might have seen this used to bring the gorillas into the 3D world, or to bring Tupac back to life. It is quite a limited technology, though. I think we're a long way from the Tony Stark-style floating desktop. I will read a quote from an interview Damon Albarn gave to MTV about the holograms at the Grammys. After Gorilla's performance at the Coachella Valley Music and Arts Festival earlier this month, the group is now casting an eye toward a full-blown US tour. Albarn and Gorilla's co-creator, comic book artist and designer Jamie Hewlett sat down with MTV News yesterday and revealed that there would be no holograms of their cartoon alter egos on the tour, despite long fulminating plans to take the technology on the road, because of this performance at the 2006 Grammy Awards. We're coming back, going to play all around America if they want us, of course. You can't, at this point, de-holograms. This is what happened at the Grammys. We opened the Grammys on television, it looked great, but we had an invisible film pulled across our stage, and you project onto that, and put smoke behind it. It's a Victorian technology, actually. So Madonna manages to come and gatecrash our idea, as people like Madonna do, because that's why they're so deep. She gatecrashed our idea, so we couldn't play with any bass or any sound, because it would vibrate the film, so it was really quiet. So we opened the Grammys, but no one could hear us, in this huge great arena, and we were crestfallen at that moment. And I'm trying to get Bono to move, because this huge great Stetson is obscuring my view, and then our song stops, and she appears on the other side of the stage with her inflated ABBA riff, at full volume, and the place just goes insane. And at that point, I thought, you know what? Sometimes, just keep it simple. That's the most Damon Albarn thing I've ever heard Damon Albarn say. He's quite sulky. Yeah, I love his music, though. Well, except for the latest Gorillaz album, Humans. Physically painful. I'm not exaggerating. Time magazine in 2012 gives us a bit more insight into the technical aspects of holographics. AV Concepts, the company that handled the projection, has done similar things in the past, most notably Madonna's performance with the Gorillaz at the 2005 Grammy Awards. As New Scientist points out, the technology is based on a concept that's been around since the 19th century. It's called Pepper's Ghost, and it works by partially reflecting light off of a piece of glass from a hidden room. You might have recognized it from the Haunted Mansion ride in Disneyland. At Coachella, they achieved the effect by rigging up a custom 30-foot by 13-foot screen that could be lowered in seconds for a hologram that's slightly more advanced than Disney's Dancing Ghosts. While AV Concepts declined to speak to Time.com because they didn't want to reveal their secrets before the second weekend of the music festival, according to MTV, the hologram took around 4 months to create, and similar holograms in the past have cost between $100,000 and $400,000 to put on, assuming that's USD. So it's not looking promising, is it? Well, that was over a decade ago, you know, surely things have improved, right? Kinda. Augmented reality seemed to be the most promising development. Much like virtual reality, you wear these hideous social suicide-inducing goggles, but instead of the image being millimeters from your eyes, it uses this thing called retina projection to seemingly project the image at a distance. Only the wearer can see and interact with these images, of course. The Verge looked into the Microsoft HoloLens and the much more streamlined but more limited Intel Vaunt smart glasses. I will link to those videos in the footnotes so you can get a proper demonstration of them. Right now, augmented reality seems like the most likely solution, and you can go out and buy a lot of this tech right now, but you wouldn't look cool like Tony Stark, you would just look like a weirdo reaching out at invisible things. So that's somewhat disappointing. Back to the movie. Whalen summarizes the story of Prometheus as so.
The Titan, Prometheus, wanted to give mankind equal footing with the gods. For that, he was cast from Olympus. Well, my friends, the time has finally come for his return.
I mean, not really, but it's interesting that he reads it that way. Fire didn't make humans as powerful as the gods. As far as I can tell, that's never been the meaning of the story. This is not related to anything, but Fifield looks so miserable, it's funny to me. I just felt like mentioning it. Maybe it could be the episode title card? Yes. Charlie uses a little Rubik's Cube device. It seems to be a portable projector. I don't like it at all. It doesn't feel like something that belongs in an alien movie, and it doesn't make sense that it's based on a Rubik's Cube. I don't get it. Also, we just saw a projection of Wayland, so surely they could just use the same setup? Have you ever had to do a presentation where you were expected to bring your own projector? I don't think so. Honestly, I might have preferred an awkward moment of Charlie fiddling around with a laptop trying to get his PowerPoint presentation to work. I don't mind that Prometheus is more high-tech than Alien, but I just don't feel this particular device is believable. It's too cutesy. I think Charlie's wardrobe is pretty great. Again, you get everything you need to know about him based on the wardrobe. It's very casual, unstructured clothes. He rolls up the cuffs of his trousers. He wears thongs / flip-flops. And a shamarg scarf. He's like a douchebag hipster Nathan Drake. We end just as Charlie is about to begin the presentation.
These are images of archaeological digs from all over the earth. That's Egyptian.
And it cuts off there. I was curious to know how well the artifacts on display compared to the real things, so I consulted with a friend of the show, Steph, who has a Bachelor of Arts in History, and also has an encyclopedic knowledge of such things. I am jealous of her book collection, let's just say. Let's focus on the Egyptian one for this minute, as it's the only one we get a close look at. The text on the screen says it's Egypt, 2470 BC, from the West Nile Delta. The image shows deities walking up and down the margin, and some kind of falcon god in the middle. Which may be Ra, obviously, Horus and Sokar, and I think there's a few others that have the falcon head, but it is most likely Ra. This must have been a fun project for the props department, or at least I would find it fun because it involves research, and if there's one thing I love, it's research. The Egyptian papyrus is the least visible artifact, and it's also the most deteriorated, which makes sense because all the rest of the artifacts are stone. Also, it was supposedly found in the Delta. There's water everywhere. How did this thing survive? But from what we can see, it looks about right. There's nothing in the image that looks obviously wrong. Ancient Egyptian art, much like the culture itself during the Pharaonic era, does not change drastically. You've got about 5,000 years that look relatively consistent, which is crazy. Think about your own country and what that would have looked like 5,000 years ago. Unrecognizable. It's not like the Egyptians were isolated, they regularly interacted with the surrounding cultures. We will get more into that in the next episode. Overall, the Egyptian image seems to be the least relevant. For one, it's really hard to know what's going on in this image, but it certainly doesn't read as well as the other artifacts. The others follow a more consistent design, the same as the one we saw in the cave in Minute 7, you know, engineer pointing at a six-star cluster. I'm not sure why the engineer is depicted as a falcon-headed god. It's possible that it's because Ra is sometimes seen as the god who created the world. Alternately, it could simply be how the Egyptians interpreted the engineer helmets. It does have a somewhat similar silhouette, and they weren't, I don't know, tapirs and elephants around, so falcon, close enough. Curiously, the engineer, if engineer he be, appears to be preaching to or teaching the deity surrounding him. So not only did the engineers direct the course of human lives, but this suggests all the gods were influenced by the engineers too. Above Ra is a bar running horizontally across the image, and above that is a large semicircle. It's hard to make out what this is intended to be, maybe some kind of solar barge or ship. Egyptian artwork is often non-literal, but there is evidence of astronomically accurate stars in their art, in addition to anthropomorphized constellations. Somehow, I was not able to make a Stargate reference in this episode talking about ancient Egypt and aliens. Shame on me. Wait. Shit. Is that what the semicircle is? Is that a Stargate? That's the theory I'm going with. I feel like SG-1 would fare better on this mission, to be honest. I don't see Daniel Jackson seeing a hammer peed and going, "Oh look, let's put our face in it." Alright, that about covers it. This is Colson signing off. You can find me on TravianDesigns.com, TravianOr Prometheus by Minute on Facebook.